The serve, sliced, backhand return. Rafa with a backhand volley, and it's over. Game, set, and match. His third U.S. Open Men's Singles Championship.
Sloan from deep beyond the baseline plays a backhand. Keys a forehand. Sloan just hammering away. Now steps into a forehand. It hangs over. Forehand netted by Keys, and Sloan Stephens is the 2017 U.S. Open champion. A warm hug at the net between the two friends.
Here comes a big smile with Sloan. She can't believe it.
It's episode 22 of Courtside, the official podcast of the U.S. Open, and we're just days away from the much-awaited start of the year's final Grand Slam at Flushing Meadows, when the world's best descend on New York City for the glitz and the glam, but also the challenge of trying to claim one of the biggest prizes in tennis inside Arthur Ashe Stadium in just a few weeks' time. Hey everyone, Nick McCarville here, and I'm super excited about the episode we have this week on Courtside for all of you. We're wrapping up the action from the Western and Southern Open in Cincinnati last week, where Kiki Bertens was the winner on the women's side, saving a championship point against world number one Simona Halep, and also Novak Djokovic completing the Golden Masters, finally winning his ninth. He's the first man to do it. He beat Roger Federer in straight sets. We'll talk about that a little bit. We'll also talk about this week's action and the U.S. Open series. I'm sat courtside right now inside Stadium Court at the Connecticut Open in New Haven as four of the WTA's top 10 players are here this week, including three-time champion here Petra Kvitova, while the men of the ATP World Tour are down at the Winston-Salem Open this week at Wake Forest. I'm pleased to say that former world number one and 1998 U.S. Open champion Lindsay Davenport is joining us in just a couple minutes on this episode to help us break down the action from Cincinnati and also talk about the week of tennis that we have this week in New Haven. And we're also going to recall her pre-U.S. Open routine. Lindsay played here a lot in New Haven. I think I mistakenly say she won in 2006. She won here in 2005. But she actually reached six finals here overall. She was a mainstay, and she talks about why she chose to play here versus having the week in New York. And then we also, of course, we had to pull out a couple of her favorite U.S. Open memories. That's to come. And then later in the episode, 2016 Rio Olympic gold medalist Monica Puig sits down with us in a candid conversation about life on tour and also the challenge of staying a top-level player. Puig has bounced back from a hip injury this summer, winning gold at the Central American Games, and she's also hoping to make her first deep run at the U.S. Open. Before we get to talking about tennis in full, it's officially U.S. Open time already. That's because Fan Week has started, and the grounds of the National Tennis Center are open to the public this week through this coming Sunday. You can come out and watch the qualifying event, which is underway. You also can see the top pros practice up close and personal, and you can check out the brand new Louis Armstrong Stadium. Qualifying is underway, actually, and all of it can be followed live for the first time on Tennis Channel, which will be covering the event in full. Just a little bit of a preview. American names include Bethany Maddox-Sands, Ernesto Escobedo, Vicky Duval, Bjorn Fratangelo, Nicole Gibbs, Riley Opelka, Christian Harrison, Corey Goff, Donald Young, while some of the familiar tennis personalities in qualifying include former top 10 player Ernest Gulbis, Canadian young gun Felix Auger-Aliassime, former U.S. Open runner-up Vera Zvonareva, the big server himself Ivo Karlovic, Swiss veteran Patty Schnieder, who continues her comeback, Wimbledon finalist Jeannie Bouchard, and there's an all-Australian clash in the first round, Thanasi Kokkinakis taking on Bernard Tomic. You can get all of your updates for qualifying and much more at usopen.org. Okay, enough from me. Let's go ahead and talk about Cincinnati and also about the specialness of the week here in New Haven with Lindsay Davenport, who we caught up with before an exhibition last night at the Connecticut Open featuring herself, Connecticut's own James Blake, and a couple of stars from the Yale tennis team. Here's Lindsay.
I'm sitting in the depths of the Connecticut Open Stadium Court, which has seen many great matches over the years, and many of them included the woman who's sitting across from me, Lindsay Davenport, who won this title, I think, in 2006 and made the final another five times. Lindsay, how is it to be back in New Haven?
Oh, I love coming back here for a lot of different reasons. The first year I ever played here, and I'm going to get the year wrong, I want to say like 94 or 95, it was just a women's exo. and the men had had a tournament here for many years, and it was the first time that the women played here, and had a blast. And then over the years, you know, I always like to kind of hide out from New York as long as possible until I got there for the Open. So I used to covet coming here. And of course, then when Anne was running it, she's someone I've looked up to for many, many years, for many different reasons. And she took over the tournament here. So I used to love being able to come here, kind of escape the pressures of New York, kind of have a peaceful week, play the tournament, and then kind of get ready for New York.
Yeah, I mean, the event has obviously changed over the years. At one point you said it was a women's XO and it was a men's event.
Yep.
Then it was a women's only, then the men and the women together. Now it's just a women's event over the years. But you said you kind of like to hide out from New York. Everyone has a different approach to the U.S. Open. Why did that feel like it worked well for you?
Well, it just seemed, you know, I'm from California, which is a little bit more of a different mindset than maybe in New York. And even playing the tournament, you know, I would get stressed out with traffic, or how long was it going to take me to get over there, or how long could I practice for, or, you know, it just seemed like people wanted more from a top player sometimes a week before a slam. So for me to be able to come here and be able to practice as long as you want, take the court for 4 hours here. There's so many courts here at Yale. It is a great center court, so it kind of replicated a big match court anyways. Great field, and it was just quiet and nice, and I felt like I wasn't going to get into, you know, kind of the craziness of either the media or even, you know, walking through to go practice and thousands of people around. All of that would kind of stress me out and get me more anxious.
Yeah.
So we just felt, my team and I, throughout the years, that it was a much better play for me to come here.
So we'll talk about a little bit of what happened last week at in Cincinnati, and then we'll kind of talk about what's to come in the week to come. But tell people why you're here. They're going to listen to it after the fact.
Yeah.
But Anne Worcester, who's the tournament director, she's been here forever. She's brought you and James Blake and a few other select people back to play a cool event here.
Yeah, we're going to play some pro celebrity tennis tonight, and also play with some of the great players from Yale. The coolest thing that doing all day, or that I did today, was do a luncheon with a bunch of about 150 high school female athletes from
awesome.
Around Connecticut, all different sports, and talk to them about the impact that sports made on me, and how it helped me through tough times, and to become the person I am today. And then James, you know, who likes James, right?
No one.
No one, exactly.
Connecticut's
own.
I'm
going to have to stomach him tonight on the court. No, he's one of my favorite people. So we'll have fun out there tonight, and hopefully he doesn't hit me.
Yeah. With a tennis ball, right?
Exactly,
tennis
ball. Exactly. Yeah.
And you and James actually have gotten to spend some time together. I think it's got to be nice for, you know, the former stars you play on tour, right? And you know these people and different friendships, but now you guys sharing the booth often at Tennis Channel. It's kind of cool to see him in that role and what he's been able to do too.
Yeah, you know people when you're playing on tour, but there's only a select few that you really, really get to know. Obviously, he had a great reputation, and now that he's worked at Tennis Channel for probably the last 4 years, we've gotten to know each other really well, and he's one of my favorite people now in the sport. And my husband always jokes I get more texts from James because we play each other in word games every day, multiple times.
Really?
My girls even know, like, are you playing James? Because then we won't talk to you, because I get really competitive with him. I enjoy his company, and he stands for so much, and he's very smart. And he's not afraid to stand up to people. He's been through a lot as well, some great stories, a wonderful family that he has. So I think the world of him.
Yeah, so we've got a great week to come here in Connecticut. Petra Kvitova is a three-time champion. She's playing tonight. We also have Julia Gerges is here, Caroline Garcia, a lot of the top players. Disappointingly, Simona Halep did pull out the world number one. She makes both of those finals, obviously some exhaustion there. But if we turn our eyes towards the U.S. Open, which is now just days away, Lindsay, is she the odds-on favorite, or how do you kind of look at the women's field in general? Because at the French Open and then a little bit at Wimbledon too, it felt like open season for the girls.
Yeah, it still feels like it's open season, where I think if you're a certain player of a certain level, not necessarily matter of ranking, but if you feel that you can win a slam, I think why not? And it's a great time. It's not just two people, three people. You'd have to put your hand into about 10 or 12 that have a chance to win. I mean, we had Wimbledon before the third round before the fourth round began, we had no top 10 seeds. Like, that is so
crazy.
It's so crazy. Certainly, Simona's one of the favored. And unfortunately for the tournament here in New Haven, this was a necessary step for her to, if she's going to make a deep run in New York. It's not so much physically. I think it's just the mental exhaustion and the pressure and the stress of playing match after match. I mean, you can't make a deep run at the Open at the end of your fifth week of matches. So probably a smart move for Simona for her Grand Slam success. But I don't know if she's necessarily the outright favorite. I don't know what the bookies say or the odds makers say. You know, she's never been to a final there. So that all of a sudden is a tough position to then put her in. She would, I would assume, feel much better now that she's a French Open champion. But she didn't carry that confidence through Wimbledon. I think there's a lot of players. I think a lot of people are interested to see how Serena looks in the first few matches. Does she get better? I'm still a believer, and I'm going outside the top 10 right now, but Azarenka, when she starts to click her game into gear, she's reached a couple finals there. She hasn't been totally on yet this year. We'll see if she's able to click it on. But then I think you go to all these players. You have Wozniacki, who's played well at times this year, been injured at other times. Muguruza, who can play great, who's had a tough summer. There's really no rhyme or reason to say why a player all of a sudden goes into a slump. But I would think that 10 or 12 people are on that list to win.
And now we have to add Kiki Bertens to that list,
absolutely.
Right?
I think so. And I think she'll believe it even more after a huge tournament in Cincinnati, big wins as well. I mean, you got to think something special is going to happen for Sloan when she walks through those gates for the first time and gets back out on that court. You know, so interesting. Someone just explained to me, and I didn't know this, they're only putting two matches on Ash during the day, so that actually gives fewer players a chance to get out there. You know, you could say, oh, Sloan's going to play every match on Arthur Ashe Stadium court, but with only two women's matches now and two men's during the course of the day,
yep,
and night,
yep,
not as many opportunity for players to hit out on that court or to get match practice.
Feel,
I mean,
it, yeah. I don't think I realized that either.
Yeah, and someone was telling me, oh, now they start at 12. I was thrown for a loop,
yes,
in the last 48 hours
that
trying to figure
familiar
out the new schedule. So I think that'll be interesting to see, you know, where now all these top players play. They're really trying to make Armstrong a premier court, so I think you're going to see some really top players play out on there a little bit, which will be different for some of the players.
Yeah, and part of that too is the night session, right?
Yep.
So they'll add a night session on Armstrong, so
yeah.
I forgot that it was just two matches on Ash.
That's what I've been told.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that.
I think
that's
you're
correct,
right.
But,
we should double
yeah
check our facts on the U.S. Open podcast. I'm going to get to
exactly.
I'm going to get
sorry
to the source of that. No. Of course, I think you're right.
But I was going to say Sloan's going to play every match on Ash, but I actually
necessarily
don't think that's the case.
Yeah, totally. Well, there's a lot to look forward there, and I think just shortly before we talk about the men, I mean, so much of the press attention, because we're in New York, because it's the U.S. Open, will be on Serena,
yeah,
and the comeback. A year ago, during the U.S. Open, she was giving birth and then essentially fighting for her life when little Olympia came into the world. So this is 12 months on for Serena.
It's amazing. And I have to say, so just yesterday on my flight to the East Coast, I watched her documentary. My airline had all five episodes, and
yeah,
I thought I hadn't watched one yet. And I'm sitting there, and my husband, who's in the aisle across from me, like, is like, sees me crying. I keep hearing the stories, and you hear it, and then, but to see it, and to see like how vulnerable she was and how real she was in this show, was pretty remarkable to me. And I don't know, I had to have four C-sections and going through it all, and I'm sitting there, and I'm like, oh my gosh, like, you put yourself in her shoes, and how absolutely terrifying to have complications after the fact. I think that she is by far going to be the biggest story. And I think you can say that men's or women's. The fans are going to go absolutely bananas when she comes back out onto court. They love her in New York. I think it's going to bring out a side of her. We saw a very composed Serena kind of at Wimbledon. She was trying really hard to
yeah
get back, disappointed after she lost. But I think she's going to really use the fans' energy.
Yeah.
I think this is one of her favorite places to play. I think the fans connect with her better there than anywhere in the world. They're going to be so excited to have her back out there. And for her, I mean, her daughter's going to turn one during the tournament. You know, I think it's going to be pretty special for everyone, but especially Serena.
Yeah, well, a lot to look forward to on the women's side. Obviously, we'll be previewing that before the U.S. Open starts as well. Just a quick word on the men before we wrap up, because oftentimes it feels like we're just talking about the big four, or we're just talking about one or two players on the men's side. But I feel like there's so many dynamics at play. You have Novak Djokovic, who just won in Cincinnati, completing the Golden Masters, winning all nine of the Masters Series events, which is incredible. He's the first player to do that, Lindsay. And then you look at Roger, who's looked pretty strong. I don't think Roger felt like he played his best tennis in Cincinnati. overall. But then Rafa wins in Toronto. He takes the week off. Andy Murray's coming back. Stan feels like he's roaring through. And then you've got these other guys knocking on the door, just in general, of Marin Cilic and this whole other crop of guys. Stefano Tsitsipas, who had such a great run. Kevin Anderson, who has a good year. It feels like maybe the men's list is a little bit longer than usual.
It is. And I think it's a great time right now for men's tennis, as everyone was missing Andy. Everyone was very concerned about Novak and where he was. But I think his reemergence is a game changer for the men's game. In 2017, with Roger and Rafa absolutely dominating, it's great to have another name in the mix. And I love Novak's story and showing that he went through so much, some of it personal, some of it physical, all of it. And he had to deal with a lot in 12, 18 months. And who would have thought at the Australian Open or in Indian Wells or Miami that things would click so quickly for him, even after he lost at the French. He was so upset that night he lost. He wasn't sure if he was even going to play the grass. And then you look back now, Wimbledon champion, also Cincy champion. It makes for the dynamics of the U.S. Open much different. And I think, I don't know, again, the odds makers, but I would think that he's probably the betting favorite now with all the momentum he's gotten. Rafa probably very close. And then you have Roger, the fan favorite and sentimental favorite for a lot of players, a lot of fans, I mean.
And players.
Yeah, that's right? True, exactly. But I think it's a great time. I think on the women's side, you're not really sure who's going to win. On the men's side, you could probably choose three or four names that you think it's going to happen, but you have a lot of challengers coming up as well, a lot of new faces, a lot of fresh blood. I think it's going to be an awesome tournament.
Did you think it was smart for Rafa not to play Cincy after that Toronto run?
Yeah, you know, for whatever reason, I was still surprised because he's always, it just seems like he's so durable and he keeps going. But I think he's making some wise decisions based on his age and based on the physicality. Even after the French, I mean, almost always he wins the French Open and the next day there's a picture of him hitting on grass somewhere. And this year he's like, okay, guys, I can't do it.
Yeah.
I'm going to take some time here
Pulled
and
out of Queens.
Get ready. Yeah, yeah, and he gave himself a real chance to win Wimbledon. Lost that heartbreaker in the semis to Novak, but he had to pull out of some tournaments, Queens, along the way. But I think that's what you have to start doing when you reach a certain age. For some players, it could be 30, it could be 35. In Rafa's case, 31, 32, and he's got to take care of his body.
Yeah, it feels like he's starting to really make those decisions for himself.
And he probably learned a little bit from watching Roger kind of go through this and, okay, I've got to really think my way through this and pick and choose where I'm going to play, where I want to play my best.
Yeah, well, we could talk to Lindsay Davenport all day about tennis, about many things. The last thing I want to ask you is, you're a U.S. Open champion, you're a former world number one. What's your favorite thing about tennis in New York? I know you said you like to avoid it before the week of, but you liked it in tournament, right?
I did. You know, I was probably different. I didn't necessarily love the night matches. You see, you hear some players that like thrive off that energy.
It's what they
play
for. That's
like the opposite of my personality. One of my favorite matches, I mean, one was on grandstand against Sabatini when I was 16 years old, I think, and I ended up losing, but it was still one of my favorite memories. It was kind of like my introduction to the New York fans.
I love that.
And, you know, I love watching, and people say this all the time, the outside courts. You could find a doubles match out on the outside court, and the fans are going crazy. There's lines. I mean, try and get into a Bryan Brothers match, out on court, I don't even know, 17, and it's still packed out there.
Yeah.
That, to me, as an American, those were the fun matches to be involved in. Kind of on the field courts and really with like the true like New York fans.
Yeah.
And that was awesome.
Okay, lastly, who's better at Words with Friends, you or James Blake?
Well, anagrams, it's me.
Oh, it's anagrams.
No, but we play two games.
Oh,
we play Word Find, and he kicks my tush. And I've been trying for a year to get better. And I'm closing the gap slowly. Anagrams, I own him. So we take turns. We play one of each, so it's fair for
each.
Back
and forth.
And then it's massive celebration when either I win, like, the word search or he wins an anagram game.
Oh, I love it. Lindsay Davenport, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thanks to Lindsay, who you can hear and see each morning on Tennis Channel's Live at the U.S. Open show, which airs from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. Eastern every morning. You also can go to usopen.org for everything you need. I mentioned following qualifying there, but go there for U.S. Open tickets and all things as we wrap up the U.S. Open series and get into U.S. Open time, tickets, TV times, draws, order of play, previews, wrap-ups, photos, highlights. It's all there. It's all on usopen.org. And get that U.S. Open app, too, because everything you need is at your fingertips on the official U.S. Open app. Let's now go to Monica Puig. She was a shock winner at the 2016 Summer Olympics, where she beat Garbine Muguruza, Petra Kvitova, and then Angelique Kerber in a dramatic women's final to win her country's first ever Olympic gold medal. She became a national hero in Puerto Rico and has used her star status in the last year to help her country after the devastation it faced after Hurricane Maria. I spoke with Monica after a good win here in New Haven over Tamea Bachinski. We also discuss a comeback from injury, her Olympic memories, her continued work in Puerto Rico, and much more, including a new dog in her life. It's a fun listen. Monica Puig had an injury earlier this season, but she's back on tour playing some great tennis. We're here in Connecticut. You just had a good win over Tamea Bachinski. How good does it feel to be back on the court, A, and also we're talking to you after a win, so you've got a big smile on your face, too.
Yeah, no, this is definitely the form that I wanted to find. You know, it was a little bit tricky coming back from an injury, especially when I felt like I was starting to find my groove and playing my best tennis of the year. And, you know, it came at a bad moment. But starting to feel that same way again, starting to feel that confidence coming back, and just really happy with where I am at the moment.
When you go through, you had a hip injury, you were out from Rome through Wimbledon, so just over a month. When you go through something like that, there's obviously the challenge to get your body better, but then talk us through we're seeing it with Andy Murray and Stan Wawrinka on the guy's side at a high level. There's also the little bits that you lose of competition and the pressure and just those little moments that I think we take for granted as fans, you professionals deliver on court.
Yeah, it was really tough. I was really sad for a lot of those weeks, especially watching the French Open on TV and just knowing that there was no possible way of me competing there. It was tough, and especially, you know, coming back from my hip injury, I ended up injuring my quad in the process. So your whole body goes through this transition that it's not strong enough because you can't work out, you can't really do much. So, you know, it's a part that you have to really be careful in coming back and just, you know, take it little by little. And, you know, we're all so anxious to come back and to get on the court right away because it's in us, it's our competitive drive. But you really do miss the thrill of competing and just being here and working and doing your job.
So I want to ask you about the U.S. Open because this is the U.S. Open podcast, but you're playing here this week in New Haven. What's that choice like? Because I know that this is a tough cutoff to make in general, but the week before, I think a lot of players like the atmosphere here. It's a little more relaxed. We're talking to Lindsay Davenport, who said she felt like in her career she kind of liked avoiding New York before diving into it for the Open.
Yeah, I mean, as far as my view of it goes, I haven't played that many matches this year because of the layoff. So, you know, getting as many matches as I can get is always needed. You know, I understand that next week is a slam, but, you know, at this point, I just want to, you know, take every bit of matches that I can get to kind of build that confidence. And, you know, I did it once before in 2016. I made the final of Sydney, and I went on to go to the third round of the Australian Open. So really building those matches and, you know, keeping a rhythm got me in a good groove. But, you know, for me, it's just, you know, it is kind of relaxing here. It is very chill, and, you know, it's, you know, this foresty vibe here. Yeah. So it's good. And yeah, Manhattan can get crazy with the traffic and driving over to the Flushing and everything. So, you know, it's a nice tournament. I know the tournament director well. I've known her for so many years, and she's always been so sweet and so nice and accommodating. So I think this is a tournament that a lot of players like to come to.
Monica, where are you with your expectations in your career and just in general? I know that obviously the injury was frustrating, but we've seen you at your Olympic best as a gold medalist. We've seen you also struggle on the court just because the level on the WTA is so high right now.
Yeah, you know, I come off the greatest win of my life, which was the Olympics, and it kind of struggled to find my groove there. And I feel like this year I from, you know, Miami onward, I was like really in my groove, and the injury kind of came in my way. And finally, you know, I feel like I'm starting to find my footing again and, you know, starting to get in it. So, you know, it's just one of those things. I'm still 24. You know, I'm figuring it out, and I'm not going to put any pressure on myself to say I have to be in the top 10 right now. I just want to learn from, you know, my past experiences. I want to get better. I want to grow as a person and as a tennis player. And, you know, if it takes me, you know, the rest of this year to figure it out, well, great. You know, if it takes me the rest of next year, you know, that's what it takes. You know, and this, it's really like patience in the process, and that's what I'm working on with my team right now, trusting the process and trusting that all the work that I'm putting in is going to pay off eventually, and you know, it's starting to pay its dividends again, you know, especially in this tournament, so I'm just hoping that I can keep the ball rolling.
We're now 2 years removed from that incredible win in Rio where you won Olympic gold, beating Angelique Kerber in the final. Mm-hmm. How does that moment now for you resonate now that you're 2 years away from it, and does it have any impact on your life now today?
Yeah, it feels like so long ago, really. 2 years did fly by, but, you know, it feels like it was you know, a long time ago. But it was such a great moment, and just to see myself compete at that level, dominating each match, and in the semifinal and the final when things got tough, you know, I just rose to the occasion and got tougher, especially playing against these champions. It was really a week that I can look back on and say, you know, that level is in me, that I can bring that out again. It's just, you know, it was the perfect week, honestly. It was, nothing really went wrong. I just found I had an answer for everything, and you know, it's not always going to be that way, and it, you know, it definitely shows that the consistency is not always there, but you know, you try and you know, go back to the drawing board with your team and you figure out what you need to get better and what you need to work on, and you know, hopefully that click will happen again. But you know, I can definitely look back at that moment with a smile on my face, because it was surreal. It was definitely the most amazing week.
Yeah, I still get goosebumps thinking about
it. I do too.
And I'm not you.
Yeah, no, I do too, for sure. You know, I still cry if I watch the video, because it was just, you know, it was unexpected. It was, you know, I think my biggest dream as a child, I always wanted to go to the Olympics, you know, as, you know, whatever sport, I just always had this dream of going to the Olympics and to be able to have a gold medal. And that's something that, you know, all of these athletes are striving for. I remember walking out in the inaugural ceremony and just saying, wow, there's a bunch of athletes here who are going to walk away with the medal. I hope I can do that one day. And 7 days later, I had the gold. And it was just like, you know, I totally went into the experience just blind and just, you know, saying I'm going to enjoy every single moment that I'm on the court, because who knows if I'll get this experience again. So it was just really being present and enjoying every single day out on an Olympic arena.
Yeah, awesome. Completely awesome. I want to segue, if I can. It was such a huge moment for Puerto Rico, for the country that you represent, that that you call home. Where are you right now with your relationship? And I know that you've done a lot of work in Puerto Rico since the devastation that the country faced about a year ago.
Yeah, so obviously, huge help from Maria Sharapova in that time as well. She came to me in my time of need and our country's time of need. So that was great that I was able to go with her to Puerto Rico to donate a lot of the things that we bought from the Ucaring account that I created, insulin, portable stoves, you know, gasoline for the stoves. We handed out food, water, you know, a lot of these necessities that, you know, was needed in Puerto Rico at that time. It was the most urgent. And, you know, things in Puerto Rico, from what I've heard from my family that is still over there, it's getting better. It's not still where it needs to be. And I understand that it's a long healing process, especially now, you know, people are scared because it is hurricane season, and we're just hoping for a really quiet one so that it gives us time to rebuild and reconstruct and make Puerto Rico strong again. You know, the devastation was awful. I cried when we were landing in Puerto Rico, because it was just not the island that I remember. It was, you know, flooding, trees everywhere, broken power lines, broken poles. Like, it was not the beautiful place that I remember. And, you know, just being able to hear that things are getting better, that the tourism is increasing again, you know, the cruise ships are coming, people are going there for vacation, that's really a boost, because Puerto Rico really is, you know, the island of enchantment, which is what it is called in Puerto Rico. It is, in my opinion, the most beautiful place in the world.
Is that Ucaring account still up, or are you still
It's ucaring.com/donate with Monica, and people can donate, you know, no matter the amount, anything helps. And at this point, you know, we're just trying to see what is our next move and what's going to be our next strategy to continue to help the people of Puerto Rico. I know that my team and I were constantly, you know, working with people to try and see what is the current need and just try and make people's lives a little bit better.
So I think I'm right in saying this, that you had a big moment this summer as well, right?
Yeah. You know, this summer, the Central American Games was a pivotal moment for Puerto Rico because the president of the Olympic Committee told all of us that, you know, she wanted to bring her strongest team to the Central American Games, so that it would include a majority of the Olympic team that went to Rio. And we were all on board because we wanted to show everybody that Puerto Rico was, you know, was going to come out of this, that we're strong, that we're going to fight for our country. And Puerto Rico is an island that lives through its athletes. They take a lot of pride in the sports, whether it's baseball, basketball, boxing, tennis, anything, you know, they're always glued to it. And when we win or we do well, you can see that it just makes people's lives happier. And, you know, when anybody won a medal or, you know, we gave like a good fight or a good competition, it was, you know, everybody was just glued to the TVs. It was great. And we exceeded the number of medals. We exceeded the number of gold medals. You know, the competition and what we've built as a as an Olympic team, as athletes, has been amazing. I mean, we're such a strong family. All the athletes, you know, we saw each other again since Rio, and it was just, you know, talking about everybody's families and just reuniting, reconnecting, and, you know, just continue to fortify these strong relationships that we built.
I'm right in saying you won a medal, right?
Yes, I did. I won my third consecutive gold medal, which broke a record. And that was pretty cool. You know, I was thinking about it at the beginning. I was like, oh, I want to break this record so bad.
It's weird. I think the Asian Games are going on right now, or there's a big event right now where a lot of the Asian players are there. Mm-hmm. For you, I mean, you've been a top-level player now for years, but when you kind of go off tour and do something like the Central American Games, how do you sort of manage the rest of your schedule? Or is it weird to kind of step away from WTA and the Slams?
Of course, because it was at the same time as Washington. And obviously, I had not played many WTA events due to the injury. So, you know, for me, representing Puerto Rico is a priority, especially in the conditions that, you know, Puerto Rico was in. And it was also a good opportunity for me to, you know, shake out the rust because it was the first tournament since Wimbledon and on a hard court. You know, for me, competing is going to be the same either way, but competing for Puerto Rico is something super special. And it was a great, you know, thing for me to go out there and just compete and just have a good time and just do something else other than the tour and focus more on, you know, Puerto Rico and what we could do. Hmm.
Okay, U.S. Open a few days away. Let's wrap up here. Expectations. You've had the injury. You've had deep runs. We've seen you at your best when Monica's in full flight, when it's peak of power. It's really good tennis.
Yeah.
But how do you set expectations at the U.S. Open?
Well, honestly, I don't think I've ever done too well at the U.S. Open, so that would need to change. I would love
to. I feel like it speaks to you so well.
Yeah,
I feel like you excel in New York.
Yeah, I mean, I love New York with all my heart. It's such a beautiful place. A lot of Puerto Ricans. I just love the fact that I can go to Manhattan and walk at any time at night and everything's open. And, you know, I have a good time with my mom. She's traveling with me right now. And I feel like I'm playing really well at this moment, so I hope to carry that form into New York. And, you know, it's a slam that I would really love to win one day. And I did have the experience to play on Arthur Ashe against Venus, I think in 2015. And that was awesome. I would love to play there again. But, you know, it's the U.S. Open. It's the last slam of the year. And I just want to go in there, you know, guns blazing and just see what I can do.
Hmm. And lastly, you've got little Rio, is that right?
Yes,
and
I do.
And now you've got a new dog, too.
Yes, I have Luna. So Rio and Luna.
Are they friends?
They love each other.
Good.
They're always together. What one does, the other one wants to do. I think Rio is teaching Luna a little bit and kind of, you know, the older sibling gets the younger sibling in trouble on purpose sometimes. So
gotcha.
I don't know what's going on there. I hear a lot of complaints from my dad.
Yeah.
Luna is a menace. She is more hyper than Rio. She is definitely more bubbly. I mean, Rio, I thought she was, you know, super friendly, but this is to like the 10th degree with Luna. But they complement each other well. And I'm really glad that they get along well. And it's nice that when my parents have to go out or my dad has to go to work, they're, you know, keeping each other company and playing, and
yeah.
And it's so sweet. I mean, you could just see when I brought Luna home for the first time, Rhea was like running around her in circles, like, oh my God, I have a new friend, I can't believe this. And Rhea would like look at me and just like have this happy face, like, thank you, thank you, thank you. Hmm. So I'm glad they have
awesome.
Each other.
Well, if you want to follow the travails of Luna and Rhea, Monica's Instagram is MonicaAce93.
And they have their own Instagram Do account
they?
As well.
What's
I
that?
Think it's at Rhea and Luna Puig. So you guys can follow them, and my
yeah.
mom likes to post pictures every day and videos and all that stuff, so they
Too
can
good.
Follow them.
Too good. Well, best of luck at the U.S. Open.
Thank
and
you.
Of course, here in New Haven, thanks for chatting with us.
Thank you.
Muchas gracias to Monica for the chat, and if you haven't seen those dogs on Instagram, get on there and check them out. They're really, really cute. We're days away, as you all know, from the U.S. Open, and if you need tickets still, go to Ticketmaster. Ticketmaster is the only official ticketing partner of the U.S. Open, and when you buy Arthur Ashe Stadium tickets, which I highly recommend, you can also get access to general admission seating at all the other courts, including the brand new Louis Armstrong Stadium, which I haven't checked out yet. I'm so excited to see, and there's going to be, as Lindsay mentioned, there's going to be night sessions inside Louis Armstrong, which is awesome. A big thanks to Lindsay Davenport herself for talking tennis with us and for taking us down memory lane a little bit, as well as a big thanks to Monica Puig. I'm Nick McCarville. I want to say thank you for listening. You can find Courtside on Audioboom, on Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and more. And if you've missed any of our previous episodes, they're all archived there for you to go back and enjoy a listen. Steve Flink has had some knockout interviews this year. Don't miss those. Check them out. And we'll also have exclusive coverage throughout the U.S. Open. Watch this space. It's bye for now.